All rise. Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Justice Perry-Gary presiding.
Good morning. Go ahead and be seated. All right, first matter up is docket number 89753, Gill versus Gill. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Sure.
Okay, did you want to reserve any time?
I would. 5 minutes.
Okay, come on up.
Justices, Marshall Willick for Vic Gill. May it please the court. When a child is born in a place, the place of birth is the baby's home state. If child custody litigation is begun within 6 months of the date that that child leaves the home state, child custody litigation is to proceed in that home state. The analysis of this case is really that simple. In Friedman, this court stressed its duty to promote uniformity of the law with respect to the UCCJEA among states that enact it. It is for that reason that the cases, the out-of-state cases, in the briefs and the supplemental authorities are important, because they all stress the same handful of messages. UCCJEA jurisdiction is subject matter jurisdiction. Home state priority is to be respected. If there is a home state, courts are not to look at significant connection or relatives or anything else. Custody jurisdiction is to be determined at the commencement of an action. Subject matter jurisdiction under the UCCJEA cannot be conferred by consent, waiver, or estoppel. So if custody litigation begins within 6 months of the date a child leaves her home state, that home state should hear the case. And the rules apply exactly the same way whether the other place is another state or another country. The Joint Editorial Board of the Uniform Law Commission and the ABA and the AAML and the AFCC has made it very clear in a recent commentary that a Hague determination is not a custody determination, and it has no effect of any kind on a UCCJEA jurisdictional analysis. Not who is entitled to custody, not where the custody case should proceed. The ULC urges courts to apply the UCCJEA as written, as the sole basis for determining the jurisdiction and following home state priority.
Mr. Willick, why would Nevada want to take jurisdiction at this point? Wouldn't that just make everything a mess?
No, and it's not a matter of wanting. It's a matter of the alternatives. We've seen this movie before. Some members of this court might remember the McMonagle case. There, as a matter of law, this court determined that custody should not have been changed from mom to dad. And the court remanded the case. On remand, the trial court judge said, you know, a year has gone by, and the child's doing okay with dad, so maybe we should just leave things as they are and leave the child with dad. This court issued an order requiring that judge to appear personally in this room and explain why the judge's personal inclination should go on rather than actually following the law and following this court's order. The judge promptly changed her mind, decided to follow this court's order and the law, and custody was restored to mom. The situation here is the same. The law is clear. This is the home state. And if the UCCJEA's home state priority is going to mean anything, this is where custody should be litigated. Doing anything else creates the incentive to do exactly what Anjana has been doing in this case. Delay, stall, defer, refuse to participate, to run the clock. In fact, this case is a year and a half old at the district court level. We had to file a 3-day notice of intent to take default just to get them to file an answer. And the preliminary disclosures of information under 16.2 that we should have had over a year ago arrived yesterday. They've been slow playing this case for the very purpose of creating the question that you just asked. Why should we act now to actually conform to the law? And the answer to the question is, if you don't ask people to conform to the law, you create an incentive that you do not wish to create. The commentary from the Uniform Law Commission says clearly that a Hague determination has no effect on the UCCJA analysis. They said, bluntly, a decision to not return a child to country A under the Hague Abduction Convention does not impact the underlying child custody jurisdiction analysis. And in this case, as late as October of 2023, the parties were going to a fertility clinic, and Anjana was still telling everybody in Canada that her home address was the Las Vegas address, meaning that even she considered her absence up to that date to be a temporary absence. So if that's true, then as this court found in, I think, the Court of Appeals in Cragen not long ago, not only Anjana's filing in Canada, but also Vic's filing in Nevada were within 6 months of the date of departure of the child, including the period of any temporary absence. So if we're going to apply these statutes consistently, and we should, this is the home state, no matter which filing you're looking at. The order appealed from merely says that you have to look at his, not hers. But if you're looking at a temporary absence, it doesn't make any difference whether you look at his or hers. The answer is the same. The point to our appeal is that it doesn't make any difference which parent files. If anybody files for custody within 6 months of the departure of the child, the home state hears the case. We analyzed the cases from around the country, and in about half of them, the case is filed by the departing parent. And in the other half, it's filed by the left-behind parent. We have found no difference in the jurisdictional analysis under the UCCJA, depending on who files the action. And our opponents certainly haven't pointed out any such case. We're not aware of any, and we don't think it would make sense for there to be any.
Mr. Willick, do we have anywhere in the record your client's challenge in front of Canada to the Canadian jurisdiction?
Yes, it's on each pleading that he has submitted. The record has recently been supplemented by our opponents by motion, and the entire Canadian litigation, including each one of those denials of Canadian jurisdiction, are now part of the trial court record. I can't give you a page cite from memory, but it's all now part of the district court record, and I could supply it if the court wants it afterward. But it's been in every single one of his filings. He has told the court that court does not have custody jurisdiction. This court, not this court, the district court in this state has jurisdiction.
Okay, how about in the appellate record?
It is part of the appellate record now because the record has been supplemented with all of those Canadian filings. Okay. Finally, well, I'm sorry, UIFSA, child support jurisdiction, follows the same analysis. I don't think I need to say much more about that. The district court's dismissal of the child support aspect was wrong for exactly the same reason. And finally, the attorney's fees should be reversed because assuming the jurisdictional decision was wrong, and it is, then the fees that were based on that jurisdictional determination must also be reversed according to this court's case law. I'll gladly answer any other questions, but if not, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Isn't, just a quick question, the whole point of the UCCJEA is to avoid conflicts like this, isn't it?
Yes, by providing clear, objective rules that are easy to determine if you know the facts. Here, the facts are agreed. The dates are clear. The child left on May 21st, 2023, and the first custody litigation was filed on November 6th, 2023. That's less than 6 months. The rules are very clear. It's really that simple. If custody litigation begins within 6 months, the home state hears the case. Here, the district court did not convene the UCCJA conference to tell the Canadian court to send the case back here. because our opponents at the district court level said, oh, you can't apply the UCCJEA. Canada's a foreign country. And for some reason, the judge bought it and never made the call to initiate the conference. So the request to send the case to the home state where it should be litigated never happened. And it should have, and it should have happened a year ago. Now, I can't do anything about the error except ask this court to try to correct it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Susio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to present. What I'd like to first do is give you an overview of what has happened in Canada, distinguish the leading cases from our opponents, and then if we have time, thread the needle for how the Canada orders should be recognized through the UCCJEA. The most distinguishing characteristic of this case, different from almost every other case that's been cited by our opponents, is that Canada has already ruled on the Hague Convention, and it is partway through on the custodial orders too, having reached temporary orders. So starting off with, there's no major dispute as to the timeline of events presented by the appellant. So mother files in November 2023, and then shortly thereafter, early December, father files for a Hague Convention recovery in Canada. That was fully litigated at the lower court level, and then the appellant, Dr. Gill, the appellant.
So how under Nevada law do we say that Nevada does not have home state jurisdiction?
I'm sorry, can you say the question again?
Yeah. Given Nevada law, wouldn't Nevada have home state jurisdiction?
In a broad stroke, when we look at home state jurisdiction under Section 305 of the UCCJEA, the case law indicates that Nevada would have home state jurisdiction. But those leading cases, Friedman, Ogawa, and Cragen, are factually distinct, starting off with none of those cases had prior existing orders from the foreign jurisdiction. And then we're going to run into a tiering issue with the Hague Convention. It is a federal treaty embodied in the U.S. Code. And so what the appellant is asking this court to do is to go forward with Nevada custody jurisdiction. It will result in a competing order against what Canada has done. And then we're going to have I'm not quite sure how that resolves when we have two different countries with competing orders. That's contrary to the purposes of the Hague Convention, and it's also contrary to the purpose of the UCCJEA. Now, in Ogawa, which arguably is maybe the closest case that Nevada has reported upon, at that time, Japan, the country where the children were located, was not a signatory to the Hague Convention. So the district court, or this court and the district court, said that, made a finding that the temporary stay added to the 6 months, so mother could file a little bit beyond the 6 months. And as you read through the dicta, Ogawa mentions that without the benefit of the Hague Convention, that mother would have no other recourse. So in that instance, even though the UCCJEA order was not enforceable in Japan, that it gave mother a tool. And there's a quote in Ogawa, which I think is important to note, citing to a Eastern District of Nevada 1994 case, Mezzo versus Omogawa. Those countries that are signatories to the Hague Convention have an obligation to reciprocate by affording the litigants the same remedies in other courts. That's page 670 of Ogawa. In other words, that was the contrary argument by this court in making its decision in Ogawa. It said, in the absence of a signatory country, that we could go forward with the UCCJEA jurisdiction and provide a competing order. But if we have both countries that are signatories, then we have a treaty obligation to give full faith and credit to those determinations.
From a policy perspective, doesn't that have some concerns, right? Because if mom had petitioned the court to move to Canada, she may not have gotten permission to do that. It seems like an end run around the rules here.
No case for divorce or custody had been initiated when she filed in Canada. So there were no prior orders holding that back. And she was in Canada by consent of the parties. Now, that does seem to fit into the Friedman and Ogawa holdings, where that would add to the temporary stay for the six-month home state rule.
Does comity come into play at all here, comity and the policy?
It does. There's actually two pathways here for us. One is through the UCCJEA, and the other is through comity. So with comity, we have in the Hague Convention assessment, and this is also coupled with the family court concurrent family court litigation that was started in Canada. We have similar due process considerations, similar substantive law that addresses custody. They have similar notions of legal custody and decision making. So to give comity to that, it's a pretty easy reach. The Canada legal system is very closely mirrored with the United States, both being the children of English common law. And then through the UCCJEA, we have in 305 subsection 1A the six-month rule, which would seem to be read as a strict liability rule, and that's the way, the context that Friedman, Ogawa, and the Cragen cases have been cited by opposing counsel. However, when we go to the second level of 305, we get to, pardon me, I need to refer to my notes on this. When we get to the second tier, for home state, let's see. Under 305B2, the court looks to a substantial evidence test, rules that actually cut against the strict liability of subsection A that's being proffered today. The substantial evidence test points us to section 365 of the UCCJEA, and what it looks to is the duration of time, the nature and location of the evidence, that the foreign court does not have many delays, that there's a familiarity with the facts, and that starts to look a lot like the total circumstances, the totality of circumstances approach under the 2024 case, Cragen. And as we go from that, it points us to when we have the substantial evidence test, we have a way for the district court, the family court, to defer to Canada. And in looking at the, I believe it's the Friedman case, in the Friedman case, this court, in its dicta on page 851, discusses that the state without home state jurisdiction should be the court to conduct the inconvenient forum hearing. In other words, and that has already happened with Canada ruling both at the district, their district court level and their appeal level on the Hague Convention, that it's already made those assessments that would be consistent with Friedman. So this court could rely on those findings in support of one of the pathways being a deferral of jurisdiction under the UCCJEA.
Mr. Cercio, at page 5 of the court's order, the court indicates there was no reservation of jurisdiction to the Nevada courts in any of the provided pleadings from the action in Canada. Mr. Willock indicates that every pleading referenced Nevada from the appellant. What's correct here?
There are two concurrent things going on in Canada. One is the Hague Convention case, where obviously jurisdiction over the child was heavily litigated, and under Article 3, Canada said habitual residence, therefore the case should be handled by the lower family court in Canada. And in the lower court in Canada, when father filed, and the timing's correct, as mentioned by the appellant, that it was after conclusion of the Hague Convention court, because the Hague Convention acts as a stay for lower court proceedings. He has challenged subject matter jurisdiction in that as well, and it goes to trial in next December in Canada on those issues. So he's reserved or preserved, I think either one works, preserved his jurisdictional claims in Canada for subject matter. So he will get his day in court to address those things. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I have about 3 minutes left. If you have no other questions, I would like to reserve that for any rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have a few disputes with most of the things that Mr. Cercio said. The Uniform Law Commission has made a point of saying that habitual residence is not the equivalent of home state jurisdiction. They're two unrelated concepts, and the one does not affect the other. That commentary attached to our reply sets out in excruciating detail exactly how and why this case should be resolved. In terms of the facts, my only quibble with the presentation by opposing counsel is that there have been no substantive custodial determinations in Canada. We have temporary short-term access agreements because the only alternative was for my client to have no contact with his infant child for the year that it took us to get here. So, of course, there's some temporary arrangements to allow him to do it. In terms of comity, if I can jump in there, it is a permissive doctrine of voluntary recognition where there is no legal barrier to doing so. But in this case, the UCCJEA at 125A.225 says that you only recognize the orders of another country, any orders of another country, if they're made in substantial conformity with the UCCJEA. And where Nevada is the home state, Canada cannot, in conformity with the UCCJEA, exercise any custody litigation.
Mr. Willett, is Dr. Gill a citizen of Canada?
Yes.
Is the child a citizen of Canada?
Not originally, but after Mom filed her action, she filed a petition for citizenship, and the child is now a dual citizen of the United States and Canada. There is no difference between the facts of the Patel case that's cited in our opening brief and this one. The only difference is that in that case, Mom had moved from Maryland to Missouri and filed less than 6 months later. And in this case, Mom moved from Nevada to Canada and filed less than 6 months later. The result should be exactly the same. under the terms of the UCCJEA. It's a mechanical application. It is simple, and it's designed to be simple to avoid the kind of conflicts that you were asking about, Justice Perry. The whole idea is to make the matter not one of subjective intent, not one of subjective inclination, but very, very objective. And the result here is clear. You, as in terms of significant connection under 305, you don't get there. If you look at the attachment to the reply brief, the Uniform Law Commission, the people that wrote the UCCJEA, have said you do not look at significant connections if there is a home state. You don't go there. You don't think about it. You don't look at it. You don't consider it. If there is a home state, the analysis is over, and the result is clear. And I'm sorry if it sounds overly simplistic, but it really is. The rest of it is smoke and mirrors.
And is there any dispute about which filing is the trigger for the six-month look back?
No, that was what they argued at the district court level, which led the district court to make the error that you made, because they said that, oh, but Dad didn't file within this 6 months from the date Mom departed, only Mom did. But as I indicated, we've analyzed the cases, and half of them are the moving away parent filing, and the other half are the staying behind parent filing. We haven't found any distinction anywhere in any case where that has been made. Certainly, our opponents haven't pointed out any controlling authority.
Is there any consideration to be given to the fact that pretty much the whole Canadian, much of the Canadian process played out for a long period of time, both affirmatively on Mr. Gill's behalf and obviously defensively on his behalf, all in Canada? Is there any reason why we shouldn't consider that in terms of why he didn't file in Nevada right away?
Yes, because as Mr. Cercio said, and I agree with him, the convention on its face says that while a convention proceeding is pending, all custodial actions are supposed to be stayed. Now, Mom violated that. She went ahead and filed her action prior to the conclusion of the Hague Convention, but her violation doesn't make it right. It doesn't make the rules go away. The convention, which is the law of the land here, says that Dad couldn't conclude a custodial action in Nevada. Some courts have read it as can't initiate a custodial action until the Hague Convention proceeding is finished.
He initiated the Hague Convention action in Canada, correct?
Yes. As, can I finish that sentence?
Yes, go ahead.
As he's supposed to. That's the way the convention works. You file the action in the place to which the child has been removed. So that was an appropriate thing to do. Was that clear?
100%.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Then I thank the court.
Thank you. A few corrections here. The child was a citizen of Canada at birth. It's much like U.S. citizens. A child born of a Canadian parent is instantly a Canadian citizen. The fact of registration that mother did 2 or 3 days before she filed her Canada complaint is a mere formality. The child was already a dual citizen. On the that mother violated the Hague Convention is an incorrect statement of fact. Mother filed her complaint for divorce in Canada on November 6th. Father did not file his Hague Convention case until about a month later, on or about December 14th. So the Canada divorce and custody case predated father's Hague Convention filing. Now, once that was filed, then that put a stay on both countries. So the appellant and the respondent are consonant with that stay. Let's see. For father's participation in the family, the equivalent of the family court in Canada, he has purposely availed himself of that, notwithstanding his challenges to subject matter jurisdiction. There's no stay the Canada case is going forward, and by consent, he entered into a contract that has been ratified and adopted by the Canadian court, similar to what we do here in Nevada, a stipulation in order, where the terms of the parenting contract are placed into the form of a stipulation in order and then signed by the judge. So he has already purposefully availed himself of the laws of Canada while he concurrently fights the subject matter jurisdiction of that.
Let me ask you on,
yes, sir.
Assuming Nevada is home state, then can The Hague divest Nevada of jurisdiction? That determination.
Well, Canada is a sovereign country. So the interplay between Canada and the U.S. is really one directional. Under Section 225 of the UCCJEA, if the foreign court is in substantial conformance, not strict liability, but substantial conformance of the laws of the U.S., then the district court is must, in the statute, give full faith and credit to that. That's Section 225, I want to say, I believe Section 2. So could Canada, I'm speculating, could Canada divest itself of jurisdiction?
No, just believe that Hague determination divesting Nevada.
I don't know that that is ultimately controlling, because all the Hague Convention does, it's a needle that points to which court makes the custody determination.
Right.
It's not the custody determination itself. The weight that it bears on is directing the case, the custody case, finish in a moment, court's indulgence. It directs the custody case to be resolved in Canada. But I don't believe that it's binding. I would look at it probably similarly to the appellants, where that was just a directional order and not a substantive custody order.
Great.
Thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
All right.